In 1 Peter 1, the Bible says, "As he which hath called you is holy, so be ye holy in all manner of conversation." In every aspect of how we live, we have to learn to think spiritually. Welcome to Gateway to Joy, as you think spiritually about the challenges of daily life.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend Elizabeth Elliott, talking this week about a wife's temptations. A wife's temptations. I came across a very startling statement. The more I pondered it, the more I was stabbed to the heart by it, because I recognized myself at once. A wife's greatest temptation is to be the triumphant rival of her husband, of the work that he is meant to do. Now, I need to clarify what I mean in my own case. In what way did that stab me to the heart? I'm not jealous of my husband's work. Neither one of us has to go to an office. He has an office in our home, and I have a study in our home, so we are pretty much side by side all the time. And I do thank God for him and for his work. I don't know what I ever did before Lars Grin married me, but I'm very, very grateful. He handles the books, he handles all the travel, he handles all the phone calls, he deals with the publishers and the travel agents and just does 1,000 things that I could never do. But I detected a spirit of one-upmanship in my own heart. I know better. I can do better than you can. How could you be so obtuse, etc.? That sort of thing would sort of flit through my semi-conscious mind every once in a while. It wasn't verbalized, I hope, but to be very honest, I realized that it was there on occasion, this spirit of competition, rivalry with my husband. And I know that it is the spirit of feminism, possessiveness, competition, rivalry, one-upmanship. And the spirit of feminism I deplore, and I have tried to combat it in small ways at my disposal, and certainly in my own heart and in my own life. I'm not looking for equality with my husband. The Lord did not make us equal and interchangeable. He made us complementary. Maleness to be male, and femininity to be feminine. And my husband is my head. I have many letters from women who wish they were married. And I have a great many more letters from women who wish they were not married. Sad, isn't it? It leads to despair. And here someone says, "There are always wives or mothers, and more than ever perhaps in these present days, who find themselves in the same position as St. Monica." She was St. Augustine's mother. And Monica, as many of you may remember, was in an agony over the terrible life of her son. He was living a dissolute, very immoral life and was not the least bit interested in God. And the story of Monica's life is one of great faithfulness, tears, prayer, waiting on God, and then the marvelous revelation of God's ultimate saving of her son, whom she thought, who she began to think was almost a hopeless case. The first lesson of her life is for those wives and mothers. It is a message of hope and encouragement. They need not despair because they cannot meet impiety or disbelief with weighty argument or brilliant logic. It is not these things alone, anyway, that change the heart of a man. They need only follow the example of St. Monica in her tears and her prayers and leave the rest to the mercy of God. Now, what's that got to do with my own conviction? Well, I am a person who likes to think that she has weighty arguments and brilliant logic sometimes. And it is not these things which are going to change the heart of my husband. we need to ask God to give us both sympathy for the man we're married to and identity with the will of God. Then we have what is required to fulfill our vocation as wives. Redemptive prayer, work, suffering, and Mary's attitude of behold the handmaiden of the Lord, let it happen as you say, or be it unto me according to your word. A woman of God has identified her will with God's. We wives are meant to be helpers, lovers, sympathizers on his side, not rivals, enemies, and opponents. Well, I have a letter here about what happens when women rule. This is a letter from a woman. She says, I grew up with dominant, abusive males. As I became a Christian and joined a church, I carried the residue of this resentment. Although I had forgiven the males in my life, I had not looked to God to change my image of what male leadership should be. The Word says in 2 Timothy 3:1-7 that the God-haters will worm their way into the homes and hearts of weak-willed women who are burdened with sins and troubles. I believe it was in this weak area that I began to buy into the ideas of women leaders in the church. With my fears of what would occur in submission, I was an easy mark. Eventually, my church called me to be a deacon and then to chair the diaconate. That's the head of the deacons. I also had women elders. Within 3 years, I saw a church full of integrity and love for God become a weak, lifeless body. We had difficulty getting any men to assume responsibility for the church. Our diaconate was 7-2 women to men, and our session 5-1. We had many women seminarians in the church and no church discipline or accountability in life. It still grieves me that I was a part of the small lie, and she has that in quotation marks, the small lie, that resulted in the apostasy of this body. I can see very clearly how the usurping of those God-given roles leads to death. I now attend, she tells me, the denomination of another church, and I enjoy the freedom and privilege of being a woman under the authority of godly men. God has healed my images of Christian leadership, but even in these circumstances, where a man may misuse his power and authority, I will not usurp. I will offer it to God in obedience and let the man deal with his own conscience before God. As you can see, I need a lot of help. I want to be obedient to God and to my husband, but still it is hard. Please help by sending me the book, Me Obey Him. And then she says, please do this teaching again. And that's why I'm doing it again. I have heard it, you have heard it many, many times, but it needs to be repeated because the same problems are arising more and more in churches. Now here's a lady who says that she is married to an unsaved man. He is currently an atheist, she says, who does not like me. He avoids me. He is very sensitive to attention anywhere, public or home, and there's a real gulf between us. I have freedom of car, money, charity donations, and church attendance, but he's not here emotionally. He's constantly into crossword puzzles and classical radio, so I can hardly penetrate. No sex for 18 years of any kind. He stopped, but it was very seldom for 3 years before that. We eat completely separate food and meals. He can and does cook his own suppers. He does not eat breakfast or lunch, and so there is a gulf fixed between us, it seems. I confront him from time to time, but it's just that, confrontation and no progress. He also does not trust me because I acknowledged that I spoke to my former pastor and our own personal friend about our problems. As a result, I finally heard him say he's embarrassed at this fact. As a result, we have not seen our friends for 1.5 years. How can this be healed, even a little? My husband is very proud, very intelligent, a former engineer. Not a pretty or loving picture, is it? I get help and encouragement. Thanks for your ear. There is a connection, you know, between those two letters. The second, of course, has nothing to do with the order in the church, but the order in the home determines the order in the church. When God put man in the position of authority in the home, he also put man in a position of authority in the church. And so when a woman is to be subject or submissive to a man at home who is not a Christian, it wipes out completely the possibility of her being under his headship in the church. And that's a loss for both of them. And I get many letters of this sort, women who are married to non-Christian husbands, and I have nothing more to say about that except what I have said many times. Pray for him, love him, have a gentle and quiet spirit, and forgive him if he has hurt you.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Through Gates of Splendor and The Path of Loneliness, Finding Your Way Through the Wilderness to God. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.